Medical Matters.
21 minutes after 8, Dr. Philip Patudi is my guest, ophthalmologist with an interest in cataract and glaucoma. Doc, thank you so much for coming through. Really appreciate your time.
Aubrey, thank you so much. And I think before we delve into it, I just want to really commend you, your show, and 702 for being consistent in allowing us to talk about these conditions. You'll be amazed at how many people, after listening to the show, would come back and say, listen, I heard this and that on the radio, not just from my, from this show, but from other sort of media as well. So it definitely goes a long way.
Thank you, sir. Really appreciate this. And, you know, I think the last time you and I had a conversation in a studio was when we were still at the other studios.
Correct.
So it's great to have you here.
Really beautiful setup.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate that. Glaucoma and cataracts is a conversation we've had had before.
Correct.
We had 2 weeks ago a whole week of raising more and more awareness around that. What was the thrust of the awareness campaign?
So World Glaucoma Week is a global initiative which is initiated by the World Glaucoma Association. So what in essence happens is that right across the globe, there are multiple hundreds of initiatives of raising awareness about this condition called glaucoma. And I mean, last week we got sort of feedback on the numbers. I mean, it was over, it was a few hundreds. I can't remember exactly the exact number, but We had in South Africa alone, the South African Glaucoma Association had quite a number of interviews that they were conducting on television and radio and so forth, with various, some of my colleagues, doing, quite a lot of the interviews and talking about glaucoma.
Yeah.
And in a nutshell, it's really just about raising awareness, about the condition of glaucoma, because, as we will maybe touch a little bit more into it, later on, it's known as the silent thief of sight. We know that most patients who have the disease of glaucoma don't actually know they have glaucoma. And the only way to really find out or to catch these sort of silent glaucoma patients is to bring awareness and say, look, you need to have your eyes checked, especially if you have these risk factors that I'll touch a little bit on a bit later.
What is glaucoma?
So glaucoma is a group of diseases that, in essence, they affect the optic nerve. So the optic nerve, to sort of put it simply, is like an electric cable that connects the eye to the brain. And with glaucoma, there's a few factors that affect the functioning of that nerve or that electric cable. And one of them is intraocular pressure. So the pressure that's inside your eye. That can be, to a certain extent, that affects the viability or the perfusion of the optic nerve. And there's other things such as toxins that result as a result of this high pressure. The nerve cells around the optic nerve, they are unable to regenerate themselves, or they're unable to take care of themselves because of this amount of pressure that's surrounding these optic nerves. And as a result, over time and on a very gradual sort of scenario, they slowly but surely die off. And the sad thing about glaucoma is that it affects your blind spot, your peripheral vision first. In most instances, not always, but in most instances, it affects your side vision. And as a result, a lot of patients with glaucoma will only see that there's something wrong with their eyes once it starts to encroach on the central part of your vision. And that's why early detection of glaucoma is so important, because just because you can see 6-6 wearing glasses, without glasses, or whatever the case might be, does not mean that you do not have glaucoma. And as I said, there are certain risk factors pretty much puts you in a much higher risk for developing glaucoma. And if you do have those risk factors, you definitely need to have an eye check to make sure that you don't have glaucoma. So if you do, we can pick it up a lot earlier, and it's a lot easier to treat when it's picked up much earlier.
Sure. That seems to be the theme with most medical professionals that I've been speaking to, that early detection gives you a better chance of recovery, or perhaps even full remission in any situation. So I hear that. that intraocular pressure, that's supposed to be there, right?
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Why then does it become a problem?
So let's first look at what's normal and what isn't.
Right.
So physiologically, we know that between around about 11 millimeters of mercury and 21, if your pressure lies within those boundaries, relatively, we can say you're okay, right? If you start having pressures above 21 millimeters of mercury, 25, sometimes 30, sometimes 40, 60, 70, depending on what type of glaucoma you have, then that over a long time will definitely impact the health of your optic nerve. And you correctly said, you need a certain amount of pressure to keep the contour of the, and the anatomy of the eyes in the shape and the form that they are. And the fluid that is within your eye, the aqueous humor, is the one that nourishes the inside of your eyes, and it's the one that regulates the viability or the health of your eye. And with glaucoma, that fluid that's inside your eye is unable to be excreted, or it's unable to get out of your eye in a normal fashion. There's tube structures within the eye that we call trabecular meshwork. It's a meshwork literally of cells. And in glaucoma, we know that in that area, that's part of the problem with glaucoma, is that they become blocked. And that aqueous humor then is unable to filter out of the eye and back into the circulation. And the fluid inside the eye will continue to just grow. It will just go higher and higher. And because it's a gradual process in most instances, it's often painless. So you don't feel anything when the pressure goes up, or when it's low, or when it's normal. But it doesn't mean that damage is not it's not happening at that stage.
What does your vision look like? I mean, give me a description. I'm sure you can't. But give me a description of what your vision looks like when your peripheral vision begins to get affected by the ever-growing intraocular pressure.
So that's a very...
And I'm aware that glaucoma, that's not the most definitive sign of glaucoma. But you have made it quite clear that that is usually the sign, not always the sign, but usually the sign. What happens to somebody's peripheral vision? What's happening? What happens to their vision?
So the reality of how patients perceive glaucoma is not standard. So in other words, it's different for every patient. You get what we call a test such as visual field test. And this typically gives us an indication of the areas within the nerve that are affected. And once, when you go and visit an ophthalmologist to have an eye checkup for whatever reason, whether it be glaucoma or cataracts or whatever the case might be, and you end up having this visual field test. It's quite a tedious test. You put your head in sort of like a bowl, and every time you see a light, you have to press this little clicker. Right. And that is an indication of which cells are in danger of dying off. And there are certain patterns that we know exist or occur with patients with glaucoma, especially early signs of glaucoma. And one of them being a nasal step or an acute scotoma. Now, these are all medical terms, but these are patterns that are typical of what one finds when you have glaucoma. Now, that visual field test, we don't necessarily, now especially with the technology we have, we don't necessarily wait to see those little blind spots or those areas that are busy dying off before we can diagnose you with glaucoma. We have other scans which we can detect glaucoma much earlier before the damage already occurs,
yeah,
and can be picked up with the visual fields, things such as OCT. And with OCT scans, we are able to nowadays be able to detect early glaucoma, what we call pre-perimetric glaucoma. So yeah. In other words, before you as a patient see that you are losing vision or you're having these blots of poor vision. And so just to answer your question, when I say it starts in the periphery, so it starts with small little areas. And I mean, our brains are phenomenal organs. They are able to adapt. And that's why a lot of patients don't see that as a problem.
Brain will fill in the gaps sometimes.
The brain fills in the gaps. Right, exactly. Yeah. You said it well.
Yeah.
So the brain will definitely fill the gap in those areas of blotches where you think something is going on and you just get by. I've seen a 32-year-old truck driver with advanced glaucoma and he's got tunnel vision. So in other words, he's lost a lot of his peripheral vision and he's got central vision left. He's still driving his truck. And you ask yourself, how on earth can you still be able to drive a truck with a visual field such as the one that you have?
And, yeah.
And it's because the brain really adapts. The patients learn how to work with what they have because they don't know that they have glaucoma. And that's why early detection, for me, is a lot better way of dealing with diseases such as glaucoma, which are asymptomatic.
What causes it?
Good question. Genetics plays a big role.
Right.
We know that there's a lot of genes that have been isolated, especially with the type of glaucoma known as open-angle glaucoma or primary open-angle glaucoma, as well as primary angle closure glaucoma and exfoliation glaucoma. There's quite a few genes that have been identified. So genetics plays a big role, without a doubt. Unfortunately, African descent, if you... are of African descent, have a much higher risk of developing glaucoma. Family history. Now, unfortunately, with most of our patients, don't know whether Gogo or granddad had glaucoma. They just know that, well, he was 90-something and he went blind and, you know, we're not really sure what happened. So if you know that there's a family member who has been treated for glaucoma,
yeah,
that's one very important sign to go and have your eyes checked. And especially in the African context, we see much earlier glaucoma. So now when I mean earlier, I mean by age. In other parts of the world, the older you become, obviously, the higher the risk, sure, of developing glaucoma. Sure. But I've seen a lot younger patients presenting with advanced type of glaucoma in our South African
context. Why is that? Why is the African continent... most have a greater propensity for glaucoma?
I would be speculating, to be quite honest. There are obviously studies that have been done, and one of them is genetic. Genetics can definitely play a big role, but there's other studies that have looked at, for instance, the socioeconomic status. And that's not to say that, I mean, other countries or other continents do not have poorer communities. So there must be a particular reason why the African or African patients have a much higher risk for developing, especially open-angle glaucoma. If you go to other parts of the world, for instance, if you go to Nordic countries where exfoliation glaucoma, it's a different type of glaucoma, is a lot higher. You know, so there's various geographic and socioeconomic factors that perhaps play a role in these type of glaucomas. And I must be honest, I'd be speculating if, sure, I said this is the reason why,
sure,
being of African descent,
yeah,
will lead you to, you know, this, yeah, this is the reason why we're seeing a lot more,
yeah. Yeah.
Higher incidence of glaucoma.
If you are listening to this conversation, you have any questions for Dr. Philip Patudi, who's an ophthalmologist, around issues of glaucoma, please give us a call. It's 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. Any questions, any observations, any insights that you may have into the conversation, please give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. I want to read you some of the messages that have come through on our WhatsApp line. Sin says, S-Y-N, right? I don't know whether it's Sin or... Anyway, the person says, "Hi, Aubrey. Hope you're all okay. A question for you, for your doctor. In 2006, I had cataracts removed. For the past 2 to 3 years, I've been experiencing double vision, a sort of partial vision. My left eye is worse than the right eye. Can cataracts grow back?" And that's from Cynthia. Cynthia in Johannesburg.
Cynthia. Yeah. Good question. So, that could double vision in a patient who's had cataract surgery. There is a condition known as PCO, or posterior capsular opacity. It's not actually a disease, but it's what happens after we've put in this new lens inside the eye. So when we do cataract surgery, we remove your natural lens, which is the one that's opaque or that has the cataract. And once it's been removed, it cannot really grow back. But what can happen is that the new lens that we put inside your eye can develop a small little membrane at the back of that lens that causes a little bit of hazy vision, and it might actually feel as if
the cataracts
are coming back again. And so fortunately, the treatment for that is quite it's quite easy and quick. There is a laser that we can do in the rooms called a YAG laser, where we polish this lens from this opacity. So I'm not saying that could be, that is the reason for that, but having had surgery in 2006 with the symptoms that the caller is calling about, it sounds pretty much like perhaps a PCO, and that and I would recommend that they visit their ophthalmologist who did the surgery, or the nearest ophthalmologist to have it looked at.
Nikki says, evening, Robs. Please ask the doctor what I can do. My eyes are itching so bad, I even feel like taking them out just to scratch them, says Nikki. He says, please.
Sure, Nikki, that's a very common presentation that we see in our rooms. And itchy eyes, you know, it's so nice when you've scratched for a couple of minutes and that itch really goes away. But the amount of damage that rubbing your eyes does to your eyes is, there's actually videos if you want to check on YouTube on what happens. They've actually done an MRI, a live MRI of a patient who's rubbing their eyes. And just the distortion that you cause to your natural eye and your pressure, the pressure inside your eye can go extremely high. And if that is not treated, in other words, if the eye allergy or the cause for the itchy eye is not treated and you continue rubbing your eyes, you can actually cause damage. Conditions such as keratoconus, for instance, we know that it's highly associated with rubbing of the eyes. We see a lot of children with eye allergies who rub their eyes vigorously. Their eyes turn a little bit brownish, and sometimes these white little particles on the eyes. And if your child is rubbing the eyes, that is causing damage on a regular basis. And I always explain to my patients that rubbing your eyes is like taking sand, fine sandpaper, and rubbing it continuously against the back of your hand.
Really? Eh?
Because when you have an eye allergy, you actually have a rash inside your eye. And that rash can be so coarse that it actually causes friction against your eye, and it can lead to infections and what we call corneal ulcers. And we see it a lot in children whose eye allergies are not treated appropriately. Now, I take it Nikki's an adult. It can happen also in adults in terms of allergies. And I would recommend, especially dry eyes, dry symptoms can be exacerbated by rubbing the eyes and itchiness as well. So I'd definitely recommend that Nikki also sees an ophthalmologist just so that they can have a look and see what is the cause for the itchiness.
Call, mini message here. Sorry. Question coming through. Hi, Doc. Is retinitis pigmentosa related to glaucoma?
Yes and no. Retinitis pigmentosa is, once again, it's also a genetic eye condition. And there's very little that one can do to treat retinitis pigmentosa. It almost takes away your visual field or your peripheral vision almost in a similar way as glaucoma does.
Right.
But it works completely on a different format. It's genetic. So you're born with it.
Right.
Yes, patients with RP, retinitis pigmentosa, can develop glaucoma, but it is not glaucoma. It's not a type of glaucoma.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lero Lengosi says, hi, Aubrey. I have gray ring around my pupils, and I see it's growing. Should I be worried? That is from Lerole.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I'm very cautious when it comes to sort of making diagnosis over the phone. Obviously, I'd like to know, obviously, the history, you know, the age of the patient, because that also determines what the possibilities could be. Now, if the caller is in their 80s or 70s, there is a condition called arcus senilis, which can present in that format. If the caller is a youngish patient, they might be referring to something else like a pinguiculum or a pterygium that that can slowly grow over the part of the eye, the black part of the eye or the cornea.
Yeah.
And not necessarily causing blindness, but it can definitely cause symptoms and needs to be looked at as well. And I would say, I always say, look, if you have something that is bothering you about your eyes, trust me, it's a good sign.
Yeah.
Especially when talking about conditions such as glaucoma, where you have absolutely no symptoms.
Yeah.
So if you have anything that is irritating your eye, there's so many conditions that we pick up incidentally. So in other words, you come and see me for dry eye symptoms, and after we've checked your eyes, we actually realize you have glaucoma, or you have hypertensive retinopathy, or you have AMD, or whatever the case might be.
Yeah.
So I would say if you have any symptoms,
that's good.
That is actually a good sign, because it's telling you, have a look.
Go get it checked out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As opposed, of course, to glaucoma, where there's very few symptoms.
Correct.
Unless it is caught at an early stage, or it's really starting to get bad, and now you have to go and see a doctor.
Correct.
All right. Let's speak to Merica in Cape Town. Hi, Merica.
Hello.
Hi. Good evening to you, Merica.
Hi, Merica.
Merica, yes, hi. I just want to ask the ophthalmologist, I have got blepharitis disease in my eyes, and getting worse. I know I'm not supposed to scratch in it, but I've got these worm-like long pieces of mucousy, slimy strings in my eyes. It's driving me insane. I can't see properly, so I have to keep on pulling it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now what is
the eye disease called?
Blepharitis.
Oh, okay. All right. Doctor's got that. Doc?
Yeah, so blepharitis, there's various types. There's what we call anterior blepharitis, which can be treated with lead hygiene. So you get yourself some cotton buds and baby shampoo. You mix that in lukewarm water. I'm pretty sure you have. And there's also posterior blepharitis. Posterior blepharitis is more sort of a glandular problem and more common in the elderly population. But we see it also
I'm 73.
Look, the chances that, you know, if you have stringy discharge or if you have things that you have to pull out of your eye, could definitely mean that you need to have a treatment that will not necessarily only treat the blepharitis, but the diagnosis that's leading to those stringy discharges. I don't think, you know, anterior and posterior blepharitis alone will not cause such a sort of a stringy discharge to occur.
It's sticky. It's sticky.
Yeah.
Dry eyes definitely can lead to that kind of a symptom, and there are various treatment modalities for dry eyes symptoms, and it ranges from punctal plugs to eye drops, and there's a plethora of eye drops over the counter that patients have access to. So to answer your question, to be quite honest, it would really be fair to sort of know what type of blepharitis we're dealing with. Is it anterior blepharitis? Is it posterior, and the severity of the blepharitis? Or are there other underlying conditions? There are other systemic conditions, comorbidities. There are other systemic conditions that can cause that kind of a severe dry eye symptoms. And something like Sjogren's syndrome, it's something that you would need blood tests for to ensure that you don't have Sjogren's. So is your mouth dry? Do you have, are there other areas? Do you have to drink water all the time? And
it sounds to me like Marika needs to go and see an ophthalmologist.
Absolutely. No, yeah. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
Because it looks like it's not just the, what is it called? The condition?
The blepharitis.
It looks like there's other things that
are
connected.
Yeah.
All right. Let's speak to Michael in Sandton. Good evening to you, Michael.
Good evening to both of you, and thank you, 702.
Thank you, sir.
I've got type 1 diabetes, and I've got diabetic retinopathy. The one eye is totally gone, but the other eye, my left eye, has got 20% vision. And every now and again, I'm going for an injection. Is this in any way reversible? Can anything be improved? because this is not good.
Yeah.
Sure. Thanks
for listening on the radio.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you. Yep.
Thanks for your call, Michael. And diabetes is definitely one of the conditions that we deal with on a daily basis. And unfortunately, especially type 1 diabetes, I mean, this usually patients come in, you know, from their young ages. And as they get older, the diabetic retinopathy sort of gets out of hand. My one advice that I always say to patients, no matter what we do, we can inject, we can do surgery, we can do all sorts of things. One of the important things to do is obviously to have the diabetes well under control. And it often happens that, unfortunately, some of these patients that we do inject in the eye on a monthly basis, or we do surgery, or we do laser for the diabetic retinopathy, that the sugar itself remains uncontrolled. There is a blood test known as HbA1c that can be done, which gives us an indication of how well controlled the diabetes is. And that's where I would start. You know, it's a team effort. It's not just an ophthalmology issue. We have to be, it's a multidisciplinary team effort. And I would definitely start there and make sure that the sugar is well controlled. And yes, the injections do work. They do have a lifespan. And that's why we have to be injecting on a monthly basis. And there are various protocols that we follow that minimizes the worsening of the diabetes in the eye. But, you know, treating diabetes with uncontrolled sugars is really like trying to, you know, take empty a sea with a bucket. You'll never really get to a point where you are winning. So lifestyle modification, a multidisciplinary team effort in terms of dietitian, in terms of a physician who's looking after your sugar, in terms of the medication, are you on the correct medication and so forth? Are you well controlled? That's where I would really start. And all the other things are really just temporizing measures. And yes, we win in some instances where we can get the eye to quieten down, but that often also goes hand in hand with controlling your diseases. Sure. Yeah.
Keith is an Ethel. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Aubrey. A question for the doctor. Sure. Will the sort of, in inverted commas, standard eye test that you get from an optician detect glaucoma, or do you require more sophisticated tests that could only be administered by an ophthalmologist?
Great question.
Very good question. Look, we have optometrists and we have ophthalmologists. We have opticians, but typically in South Africa, optometrists are what we can sort of call GPs of the eyes. And we work hand in hand. You know, they are trained in diagnosing and treating refractive eye problems. But they're also trained in pathology. They are trained in glaucoma. They are trained in diabetic retinopathy. They are trained in examining an eye with a direct ophthalmoscope or with a slit lamp, or what we call a slit lamp examination. They are trained in also identifying pathology. Now, with optometry, I cannot speak on their behalf, but I know that not all optometry sort of services have these technologies that are required for full extensive screening of for glaucoma, for diabetic retinopathy. You need things like an OCT scan that I've mentioned earlier. You need a visual field, and these don't come cheap. They are very expensive. So if you go into some of the more advanced sort of optometry services or shops or professionals who have these, by all means, great. But they normally work hand in hand with an ophthalmologist, so that once they see there's something going on at the back of the eye, the nerve looks very suspicious, then they will refer to an ophthalmologist. And we will then do further tests going forward and initiate treatment and surgery if required.
All right. I have a voice note. Do we have voice note, Eric? Can we have the... Great. Good. Let's do it.
Good evening, doctor. Good evening, doctor, and good evening, Mr. Aubrey. I would like some clarification on what doctor said about glaucoma affecting the blind spot. How is that possible when there is no vision in the blind spot. And I am 17 years old and I have a cataract in my left eye. It has been here almost a decade and a half, and I want to remove it soon, but doctor, is it too late? Will I eventually go blind?
The caller has a cataract.
Right.
In one eye, 17 years old, a little bit worried about whether or not this is something, is a procedure he should actually undertake. And I think he needed some clarity around.
Correct.
Something that you might have understood. But yeah, I think there's a little bit of trepidation there. He's 17 years old.
Well, I think I must commend him for the terminology used. So a blind spot in anatomical medical terms is actually the area where you don't actually have any vision. So the correct terminology to use of the area where you're actually losing your vision is what we call peripheral vision. So peripheral vision is what actually gets less and less with glaucoma. So he's very right in terms of if they say, blind spot. Blind spot is actually you can, on a visual field test, for instance, the one that I've mentioned, you'll see just a black spot.
Right.
It's usually where that optic nerve really goes through. So the correct terminology is peripheral vision becomes affected with glaucoma. So he's right in that sense. With regards to his cataract, at the age of 17, there must be a reason why he's getting an early cataract. And there must be either, a systemic problem. We've just talked about type 1 diabetes. There must be a reason. There must be another diagnosis why he's getting a cataract at the age of 17. Trauma is quite a common one in young patients who've had blunt trauma previously to the eye and they develop early cataracts. But my starting point would be, look, we need to find the reason for your cataract. And once the reason has been found, and if the cataract is visually significant, definitely needs to be looked at by his ophthalmologist. And I'm pretty sure they might have talked about removing the cataract if they feel it's going to be of some benefit.
Claudine asks, can you ask your guest if idiopathic intracranial pressure can cause issues with your eyesight?
Yes, it can. So idiopathic intracranial pressure, what that is in essence raised pressure around your brain. And there's also fluid around your brain, which nourishes our brain, called CSF, cerebrospinal fluid. Now, with that condition, that CSF goes extremely high.
So it's almost sounds like the glaucoma of the brain, of the head.
Pretty much, yeah? Because both of them have to do with pressure.
Right.
So with idiopathic intracranial hypertension, young female patients either just gained a lot of weight or lost a lot of weight in a very short space of time. So there are certain risk factors associated with that as well. And what we see as ophthalmologists often when patients have that condition is what we call disc swelling. Often bilateral, so you'll have these discs, the optic nerve that we are talking about with regards to glaucoma, but that nerve is now bulging out, and you can actually see it when we examine the eye.
Right.
And when you see that in a young patient, the high on the differential diagnosis for that patient is idiopathic intracranial hypertension, and the treatment for that is that, number one, you obviously need to exclude any space-occupying lesions in the brain. So we often tend to do scans in these patients, as well as what we call a lumbar puncture. So we put a needle, stick a needle at the back of the spine, and as we do that, we actually measure the pressure of the CSF as it comes out. And if it goes above a certain level, then we know it's most likely the condition, and the treatment for that is with medication as well. And sometimes serial lumbar punctures might be a requirement for that as well. All right. So I don't know if that answers the question, but that's pretty much what we're dealing with here.
Yeah. Anonymous asks, and I think this is a big one for me, what underlying conditions can lead to glaucoma? Is high BP a cause? exposure to sunlight, sugar, diabetes, obesity? What are the underlying conditions that we should be aware of and maybe can avoid?
Common things occur commonly. Definitely diabetes. All right. So diabetes causes a type of glaucoma known as a neovascular glaucoma. So in other words, the brain, the eye, is devoid of oxygen and it tries to save itself by creating multiple small little blood vessels. And those blood vessels tend to bleed easy. And they can also lead to this secondary type of glaucoma known as neovascular glaucoma or NVG. So diabetes definitely is one of the things that we need to look out for when we check your eyes. We also look for glaucoma. There are other conditions, especially patients who are using steroids. So it can be a cream. It can be a nasal spray for your chronic allergy or your chronic sinusitis. It can be, your spray for your asthmatic treatment. It can be treatment for eye allergies. I've seen young kids who have been placed on steroids to treat the allergies, as it is one of the treatment modalities for treating eye allergies. And any steroid component, especially if you have a genetic component or the risk factor for developing steroid-induced glaucoma, that can maybe lead you to think, listen, I need to maybe have my eyes checked for glaucoma because I have been using a steroid for many, many years, and let me just go and have a look. So that's one of the things that, one of the risk factors, rather, that one can sort of have a high suspicion for glaucoma. So hypertension, with glaucoma, it's mostly low blood pressure. Patients with low blood pressure tend to have progression in the glaucoma, especially the type of glaucoma known as normal tension glaucoma. So what does that mean? It means that your pressure is between 11 and 21, as we've mentioned earlier, and yet you are still developing glaucoma and it's progressing. So one of the things we look out for is low blood pressure. So if you're known to have low blood pressure and you have visual symptoms or you have problems with your eyes, it's one of the things that can maybe lead you to check out for that type of glaucoma or normal tension glaucoma.
I think we might have another voice note. Do we have a final voice note? Let's hear it.
Yeah, good evening, bro. Oops, sorry if I'm not on the same topic. But bro, oops, I just want to know from the doctor there, because I just tuned in, I just want to know something like about the eyes. If there's any medication or cure, like for the eyes, if I read, what is it that I can use? Or the remedies, some remedies that I can use so that my eyes can be back to being white again. Because like my eyes are red right now. And when I come out in the sun, like they are being itchy and stuff. So I just want to know from the doctor if there's any medication or home remedies that I can use so that my eyes can be clear again. Thanks.
Yeah. Red eyes?
Red eyes in an adult, itchy, most likely related to dry eyes syndrome, and needs to have it checked out. Red eyes, once again, as I said earlier, if you have some symptom with your eyes, it's a good sign. Go and have it checked out. Have somebody look at your eyes, make a proper diagnosis, and put you on the right treatment. Red eyes, typically, especially itchy, especially if you say you're going into the sun and it becomes worse, definitely one has to look at dry eye syndrome, and as well as eye allergies. Allergic conjunctivitis can cause that as well. There is treatment out there. You know, you don't have to be walking around with red eyes. I always say red eyes should not be there. You shouldn't be having red eyes. There must be a reason why you have red eyes, and you should have it checked out.
Yeah. Doc, how do we get in touch with you if we want to have a more extensive sort of consultation? How do we get in touch with you?
Yeah, my message is always quite simple. You know, find your nearest ophthalmologist, whether it's government or private. Doesn't mean if you don't have medical aid, you can't have your eyes checked. Government services provide some of great eye services. They also do surgeries. They can also screen you for these kind of conditions. So whether you are a government hospital user or a private medical aid patient, just find your nearest ophthalmologist. If you haven't had your eyes checked in a long time, please do so. I'm also in both private and government. I'm at Grace and I, as well as Spoking Hospital. But my message is really simple, that you should just go and have your eyes checked at your nearest eye clinic.
Dr. Philip Patudi, ophthalmologist with an interest in cataract and glaucoma. Thank you very much.